Good morning. This remote meeting of the Climate and Energy Finance and Policy Committee is called to order, and we will begin by taking the roll.
Chair Long.
Present.
Vice Chair Akam.
Present.
Minority Lead Swazinski.
Present.
Representative Bierman. Representative Bierman.
Present.
Representative Bowe. I believe he's joining us now. I'll come back to him. Representative Christensen.
Present.
Representative Franson. Representative Franson. Representative Grunhagen.
Present.
I believe Representative Bowe has now joined us. Representative Bowe. Representative Bowe is present. Representative Hollins. Representative Hollins. Representative Hornstein.
Hornstein present.
Thank you. Representative Igo.
Igo present.
Representative Lee.
Lee present.
Representative Lippert.
Present.
I believe Representative Hollins has now joined us. Representative Hollins.
Present. Thank you.
Representative Lislegard.
Representative Lislegard present.
Thank you. Representative Mecklen.
Mecklen present.
I believe Representative Munson is excused. Representative Stevenson.
Present.
Quorum is present. Welcome to day two of our omnibus hearings this week, members. Just a reminder, we have a deadline for amendments is 3 p.m. today. Tomorrow we will begin on amendments and we will continue on Friday if necessary. And with that, I will turn the virtual gavel over to Vice Chair Akam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we have quite a slate of testifiers today. And so I think in order to give them as much time as possible, we'll turn right to that. We're starting out first with Commissioner Arnold from the Department of Commerce. And next up will be Executive Director Will Seifert with Public Utility Commission. So Commissioner Arnold, please state your name and begin your testimony.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Akam and members. For the record, my name is Grace Arnold, and I'm the temporary commissioner of the Department of Commerce. I greatly appreciate your work, Chair Long, and the work of the Energy Committee staff in putting together this budget proposal. I'll be brief with my remarks, but I would like to thank you for including the governor's budget recommendations. It's important that these provisions remain in the omnibus bill throughout negotiations so that we do not lose two important aspects of Commerce's work by letting vital programs and funding sunset. First, we appreciate inclusion of repealing the sunset of the Energy Planning and Systems Assessment, which is set to sunset on June 30th of this year. This assessment amount is up to $500,000 per year and is split between the electric utilities for the actual costs of providing regional and national grid reliability. The work is ongoing in order to maintain reliable energy service for Minnesotans. Maintaining these existing positions through this funding is critical to maintaining an affordable and reliable energy system. Without this assessment, the department will not have the resources to complete the technical analysis needed to ensure the reliability of the state's electric system. We are also appreciative of the elimination of the Petrofund program repealer in statute currently set for June 30th of next year, 2022. The Petrofund program is a necessary service utilized by Minnesota businesses and homes across the state. Due to bipartisan and industry support of the Petrofund program, the sunset date has been extended on five previous occasions, most recently in 2016. Owners of petroleum storage tanks and petroleum contaminated property will see a direct financial benefit of the continued existence of the Petrofund, which provides reimbursement of up to 90% of costs to investigate and clean up contamination from leaking tanks. This proposal does not increase the department's FTE count. It continues the program at the existing staff and funding levels. The final budget request I'll mention is the agency's operating adjustment. At Commerce, the operating adjustment is important because it will allow us to continue to manage ordinary costs that increase just like any other business. And the cost of IT services. I would also like to highlight the many policy provisions contained in this bill that will help move Minnesota to a clean energy future that is reliable and affordable. These include the governor's clean energy package of policy proposals, the extension of the cold weather rule so that homes, the people who make payments on their utility bills are not cut off from heat in Minnesota's cold winter wet months, and a tribally created a tribal advisory council on energy. So with that, I'd like to thank you again for your work on this budget, Chair Long and members. I look forward to continuing these conversations. I'm happy to answer any questions, although to Chair Acomb's point, there are a lot of justifiers, so.
Thank you, Commissioner Arnold. Next up, we'll have Executive Director, Mr. Seifert from the Public Utility Commission, and after that, Commissioner Robertson from Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry. Go ahead, Mr. Seifert.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Long, committee members. For the record, I'm Will Seifert, Executive Secretary of the Public Utilities Commission. Thank you for your leadership and hard work on behalf of Minnesotans this session in the Climate and Energy Committee. As you know, the Commission regulates electric, natural gas, and landline telephone service in Minnesota, as well as determining the need for and location of large energy facilities. Our primary responsibilities are to make sure that Minnesotans can get safe, reliable, and affordable utility service. We appreciate the opportunity to provide brief comments on the DE amendment to House File 2110. The bill in its current form provides adequate funding for the Commission to efficiently manage the roughly 900 utility filings that are made annually, as well as implement many of the new policy provisions included in the bill. As I noted in our presentation to the committee last month, 97% of the agency's budget goes to staff compensation, office space, and IT support. Our state regulatory staff remains below states of comparable size as we oversee an industry that is evolving rapidly. We appreciate your recognition of this and efforts to provide adequate agency funding. While the Commission doesn't take positions on the underlying policy provisions in the bill, I do want to briefly recognize the inclusion of the participant compensation provisions in Article 6, starting on page 172. As a quasi-judicial agency, we rely on a public record to apply the law to and make regulatory decisions. Having robust public participation can materially assist the Commission's deliberation. The Commission is supportive of this effort to broaden intervener compensation laws beyond the current law that is limited to rate cases. I also want to recognize the inclusion of the utility diversity reporting provisions in Article 6. As you recall, the Commission convened the Energy Utility Diversity Work Group, which provided a report to the legislature on this in 2020. We appreciate your continued efforts to advance diversity reporting in the utility industry. Before wrapping up, I want to reiterate our thanks to the chair and the committee for taking the time to work on the issues related to the recent natural gas price spike. The first deadline for comments into the Commission's investigation is scheduled for Friday, April 9th, and two utilities have already made separate filings on this matter. The Commission will continue to work with the chair and legislators on this topic throughout the rest of the session to address the dramatic price increase in heating bills as a result of the February storm. Thank you for your time. We look forward to working with the legislature as this bill moves through the process.
Thank you, Mr. Seifert. And I just want to point out, we're going to hold questions until the end, but I do see that Representative Swazinski has his hand up. Did you have a question for testifiers or something else, Representative Swazinski?
No, Madam Chair, I can wait.
Thank you.
Just put me at the top of the list. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Then next up, we have Commissioner Robertson, and after that, Mr. Hansen from the Associated Builders and Contractors. So go ahead, Commissioner Robertson.
Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of the Commercial Energy Code provisions in the Climate and Energy Finance and Policy Omnibus Bill. My name is Rosalyn Robertson, and I am Commissioner of the Department of Labor and Industry. The proposed language in Article 1, Section 27, will put Minnesota on track to achieve net zero energy use in new commercial and multifamily buildings by 2036. This proposal is a recommendation of the Climate Subcabinet and is the result of a stakeholder work group convened by DLI and Commerce in the fall of 2019 and spring of 2020. As this committee knows, Minnesota is not on track to meet greenhouse gas reduction goals. Improving energy efficiency in commercial and large multifamily buildings is a key component to help the state get back on track. As greenhouse gas emissions in the commercial building sector have increased by 15% since 2005. The agency is in the process of rulemaking to adopt the latest model commercial energy standard, ASRAE 90.1, 2019. Because the model code alone would be insufficient to achieve net zero use by 2036, the legislation require additional of a minimum 8% efficiency to the next ASRAE, the 90.1 2022, and subsequent codes in order to meet the net zero goal. The $146,000 appropriation in Article 1, Section 31 will fund rulemaking costs and a market and cost analysis to determine necessary energy efficiency performance enhancements. Improving energy efficiency in new commercial and multifamily construction mean better buildings, lower emission, and a healthier Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to express my support for this provision, and I'd be happy to address any questions you might have.
Thank you, Commissioner Robertson. Next we have Mr. Hansen. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Adam Hansen. I'm with the Associated Builders and Contractors of Minnesota. Our commercial and industrial contractor members and the men and women they employ are part of the 75% of the construction industry in Minnesota that choose to be merit shop craft professions. Some of our members already build clean energy projects like solar and wind farms across Minnesota, one subject to this bill. Utilities and other project owners know that their projects will be built safely by a highly trained, skilled, and local workforce when they choose our members for their projects. After all, these are Minnesota contractors we represent who are building these projects right here in Minnesota. I'm testifying today, however, in opposition to provisions in the bill that would, for the first time ever, mandate state prevailing wage laws be used on wholly private construction projects. Prevailing wage laws do nothing to guarantee local workers are used on any particular project, nor do they ensure safer projects or a better quality construction. Prevailing wage laws can't even guarantee local current wage rates are used. The other problematic provision in the bill is the ability for the PUC to mandate that contractors and subcontractors have a government-registered apprenticeship program in order to build these private projects. This will have a discriminatory impact against qualified local contractors and the qualified local men and women that they employ. If you're part of the 75% of the Minnesota construction workforce who choose not to join a union, the odds are you're not in a government-registered apprenticeship program and therefore would be essentially prohibited right off the bat from working on projects covered under this section. It's hardly a jobs for all bill, as was previously mentioned in committee. Municipalities in Pennsylvania and Michigan, for example, have recently repealed their apprenticeship mandates on their public construction projects because their ordinances disproportionately kept out small and minority-owned companies who largely don't participate in these registered programs. The same discriminatory effect will happen if this bill becomes law. Enrollment in Minnesota's registered apprenticeship programs by women and people of color is also remarkably low. According to state figures, women, for example, make up approximately 19% of all construction workers in the state. But for registered apprenticeship programs in construction, women make up only 7% of all enrollees. Ultimately and practically, the proposed registered apprenticeship mandate will act as a union-only requirement at the expense of the vast majority of Minnesota construction workers who aren't in a union. I would strongly encourage the committee to reconsider these new and unprecedented mandates in the bill so that all qualified and local construction workers, not just those with political connections, can continue building our next generation of clean energy projects. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hansen. Next we have Dr. Jeremy Martin, Director of Fuels Policy from Union of Concerned Scientists. Dr. Martin, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jeremy Martin. I'm the Director of Fuels Policy at the Union of Concerned Scientists. On behalf of more than 6,800 UCS supporters in Minnesota, UCS is enthusiastic in its support for the omnibus bill In particular, the Future Fuels Act, the 100% carbon-free electricity, and the Next Generation Climate Act. The science is clear. Limiting global warming and its adverse effects requires rapid reductions in heat-trapping emissions now. This proposal is the level of ambitious climate leadership Minnesotans need. The Future Fuels Act takes a science-based approach that measures each fuel based on its full life cycle emissions. This will drive technological development and deployment across a portfolio of low carbon fuels, including electricity and biofuels. Replacing petroleum is a big job, and it requires us to move beyond arguments about biofuels versus electricity and drive progress across the board. Electric vehicles and biofuels are cleaner than gasoline today, but the Future Fuels Act will ensure that electric vehicles are powered with renewable energy and biofuels get steadily cleaner over time. UCS supports the updated emissions reduction targets in the Next Generation Climate Act. As climate science has advanced, we must realign our climate solutions with the most up-to-date science. UCS commends the inclusion of the 100% carbon-free energy standard within the interim energy targets. Wind and solar are the most cost-effective electricity resources in Minnesota today, and updated renewable energy standards enable Minnesotans to access health and economic benefits, including jobs, investment in communities, workforce development, cleaner air, and cleaner electric vehicles. And just transition is critical. We thank the chair for including local benefits language and excluding the HERC waste incinerator to ensure environmental justice communities are included in and benefit from the energy transition. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Dr. Martin. Next, we have Benjamin Stafford with Clean Energy Economy Minnesota. Proceed with your testimony, Mr. Stafford.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Benjamin Stafford. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for Clean Energy Economy Minnesota. We are an industry-led nonprofit organization dedicated to growing and strengthening Minnesota's clean energy business ecosystem. More simply put, we are the business voice of clean energy in Minnesota. Our membership is comprised of over 40 clean energy companies ranging from startup businesses to Fortune 100 and 500 corporations who employ thousands of Minnesotans across the state. Today, I'm here to testify in broad support of House File 2110 and for strengthening our state's clean energy businesses through policy leadership. We thank committee leadership, including Chair Long, Vice Chair Akam, Minority Lead Swazinski, and the leadership of Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan for their work in working through these discussions in this committee during a challenging session. It is worth noting that many parts of this bill had strong bipartisan support and authorship in and across legislative chambers. That includes the Energy Conservation and Optimization Act, improving our energy efficiency standards in the state, the modernization of our nation-leading community solar gardens program, including removing red tape like the contiguous county restriction, efforts to improve our state's building codes, which aim to improve energy productivity while reducing emissions, supporting infrastructure for electric vehicles, the support of the Minnesota Efficient Technology Accelerator, which it aims to improve deployment of the right emerging technologies for Minnesota's market, and equity in the workforce, including both for communities preparing for energy retirements and for workforce programs focused on BIPOC and underrepresented communities. We think this is strong policy. In terms of economic impacts, Minnesota is home to over 61,000 clean energy jobs, and those jobs were growing at 2.5 times faster than all other sectors of the state's economy, according to the 2020 Clean Jobs Midwest report. And 37% of these jobs reside in greater Minnesota. These jobs are not abstract. They represent Minnesotans working in good-paying jobs in your hometowns. Whether it's Peter Kalail from McKinstry and their energy efficiency team working in the city of Rochester, Donna Picard in Arden Hills from True North Solar helping residential customers find solutions, Clay Norbum from Jewel Clean Energy Assets, pioneering wind and biomass facility in Albert Lea, the work of Bob Blake and the Red Lake Nation alongside Impact Power Solutions. These projects and the people who make them a reality are real and in all of your districts. Lastly, we know that business risk and climate risk are intertwined. 3/4 of the Fortune 100 companies have some form of clean energy goal or target. And a pathway towards clean energy options is a pathway towards attracting investment to Minnesota. In closing, policy leadership creates a certainty that opens the marketplace for clean energy solutions. The bill we are discussing today is the kind of clean energy policy leadership our state needs. If passed, this bill will help Minnesota accelerate its transition to a clean, affordable, and secure energy system that will provide our state with a competitive advantage, create jobs, spur economic opportunities and benefits for all Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stafford. Next, we have Chris McCann with Otter Tail County. Mr. McCann, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good Morning, Chair, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. My name is Chris McCann. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Resource Recovery Association and the Solid Waste Administrators Association. We exist for the purpose of properly managing solid waste in Minnesota to protect our soil, water, and air. We support your effort to reduce greenhouse gases. While some have coined the phrase carbon-free, that is a misnomer. The issue is not only carbon, it is greenhouse gases. The EPA got the terminology correct in its recent report entitled Draft Inventory of U.S. Greenhouse Gas Emissions and Sinks, 1990 to 2019. The report says carbon dioxide represents 80% of greenhouse gas emissions. There are many other compounds that contribute to greenhouse gases. Some of the most destructive are hydrofluorocarbons, or HFCs. HFCs are thousands of times more destructive than carbon dioxide. They can remain in the atmosphere for decades. HFCs are currently in production in the United States. Another greenhouse gas is methane. Methane's atmospheric lifetime is 12 years. 1 ton of methane is as destructive as 25 tons of carbon dioxide. Methane is generated from landfilling. Where's the connection between this new report and the Omnibus Energy Bill? Chapters 3 and 7 of the report review greenhouse gas emissions from energy and waste. The report clearly states that each ton of waste landfilled is more destructive to the atmosphere than each ton of waste incinerated. Your bill will increase greenhouse gas impacts in Minnesota by diverting waste from combustors to landfills. Carbon-free should not result in increased greenhouse gas emissions. We need to have a discussion about waste management and environmental impacts separate from energy generation. Please don't confuse carbon-free with greenhouse gases. Don't be pro-landfill. The beautiful state of Minnesota, the United States, and world leaders have embraced the solid waste management hierarchy. If Minnesota legislators want to help improve solid waste management, help us through the existing waste management hierarchy already in state statute. Help us expand and prioritize reduction in waste, reuse of materials, recycling, and composting. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McCann. Next we have Justin Fay with Fresh Energy. Mr. Fay, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Well, thank you so much, Madam Chair, and good morning, members of the committee. My name is Justin Fay with Fresh Energy. I appreciate the opportunity to be here this morning. I want to start off just by congratulating you, Chair Long, and members of the committee on the incredibly large volume of work that went into the bill that is in front of the committee today. For most of the past couple of decades, when we talk about climate action, the conversation inevitably begins and ends with the electricity sector, and that's certainly not lost in this bill. The 100% clean electricity standard is a bedrock policy, looking at what the next couple of years of decarbonization need to be about. And we really appreciate its inclusion in this legislation today. I wanna just be really clear about something though, that while this is an ambitious and bold policy, it's not radical. 7 states have passed this policy. The District of Columbia and Puerto Rico have 100% clean electricity standards, and 100% clean electricity is being meaningfully considered by the United States Congress currently. Positioning Minnesota accordingly in the direction that it's all going anyway feels both prudent and responsible, and I appreciate the committee going that direction. Earlier this year, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency released its greenhouse gas inventory, and there were 2 big takeaways I want to highlight that I think are meaningfully addressed in this bill. The first is that the transportation sector continues to be the single largest source of greenhouse gas emissions, both in Minnesota and nationally. And there's a number of items in this bill that directly address, tackle this problem, including electric vehicle incentives and funding for infrastructure. That's Representative Stevenson's bill, as well as legislation from Representatives Bierman and Bowe. Resources for electric school buses and electric transit buses from Representative Hollins and Representative Lee. And of course, the Future Fuels Act, which Dr. Martin talked about, from Representative Stevenson. Additionally, the MPCA inventory noted that the largest growing source of greenhouse gas emissions is the building sector, specifically residential and commercial buildings. The landmark goal of 50% decarbonization from existing buildings that's included in this bill is a great building block for future decarbonization work in the building sector. And a number of other policies in this bill will help us get there. Those include, Madam Chair, your beneficial building electrification legislation, the accelerated commercial code legislation that Commissioner Robertson talked about, and Representative Stevens's Natural Gas Innovation Act. Finally, Mr. Chair, I want to thank you for inclusion of the Rebuild Right program with an appropriation from the Renewable Development Account. We think energy has great potential as a tool to advance equity outcomes and appreciate you using this legislation to advance that opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fay. Next, we have Jamie Fitzke from the Center for Energy and Environment. Ms. Fitzke, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Akam and members of the committee. I'm Jamie Fitzke, Legislative Policy Manager at the Center for Energy and Environment. Thank you for the opportunity to test in support of this ambitious, comprehensive, and forward-looking climate and energy omnibus. This bill applies a holistic and equitable lens to Minnesota's clean energy transition. Among the sections I'd like to highlight are Representative Lee's Rebuild Right and Representative Christensen's Energy Transition Office. While addressing very different circumstances, both of these bills prioritize communities who are facing significant challenges, acknowledge their needs, and look to plan for the future and provide assistance to these communities. Additionally, this bill creates a blueprint for improving the homes and workplaces of all Minnesotans, both now and to the future, through energy efficiency, the most cost-effective energy resource we have. This begins with Chair Long's advancement of new commercial construction building codes, as it is most cost-effective to build efficiently from the start. Improving our efficiency continues by addressing the needs of our existing building structures. Through the previously mentioned Rebuild Right grant, Representative Freeburg's revolving energy efficiency loan for state buildings, and a bill that is the very definition of coalition and collaboration, Representative Stevenson's Energy Conservation and Optimization Act, better known as ECO. But energy efficiency shouldn't stop at today's technologies. Representative Akam's Minnesota Efficient Technology Accelerator will prevent stagnation by encouraging technology innovation through work with manufacturers, suppliers, and developing a local, highly skilled workforce. As a result, Minnesota will not be overlooked or left behind, but instead will continue to ensure Minnesotans have access to emerging and innovative, cost-effective efficiency technologies for our unique climate and building needs. Finally, when growing up, my mom used to say, when you know better, you do better, meaning as we learn, we should improve. Many items within this bill embody that wisdom, including Representative Lislegaard's Buy Fair and Buy Clean, updating Minnesota's greenhouse gas reduction goals through Representative Akam's Next Generation Climate Act, and refining our resource planning and workforce through Representative Stevenson's Clean Energy First. CEE greatly appreciates the work of the committee, staff, and countless stakeholders who have worked to advance energy policy and lend their expertise. And we look forward to continuing this work. Thank you, and that concludes my testimony.
Thank you, Ms. Fiske. Next, we have Braden Solem with Ideal Energies. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Braden Solem. I'm the Vice President of Business Development for Ideal Energies. We are a Minnesota commercial on-site solar energy developer. Thank you for allowing me time to briefly speak in support of the House Energy Omnibus Bill. This omnibus bill has quite a few potential pieces of legislation that would be very beneficial to the solar industry and the state. First, I would like to speak in support of the Solar on State Buildings and the Solar on School programs. Both of these potential programs and appropriations will help institutions that would otherwise be unable or unwilling to participate in on-site solar. It will help provide them a greater financial return, which will ultimately save taxpayer dollars as these institutions pay less for energy. I specifically want to point out that the funding for schools outside of Xcel Energy territory is extremely important, as there has historically been no option for these schools to participate in on-site solar energy. This money will create that opportunity. I would also like to personally thank Chair Long and the committee for working with us to craft a solution for the issues we brought up last week regarding the state master contract for solar. The language regarding the State Master contract will help make the programs I mentioned above more inclusive to all solar vendors and will ultimately provide significant value to the state. Finally, I want to speak specifically about the photovoltaic demand credit rider language. This is especially important to the solar industry and potential customers that want to install systems over 40 kilowatts AC on site. The solar industry, along with representatives from all public utilities and the Public Utilities Commission, have worked since 2013 on developing a mechanism to compensate solar customers with arrays larger than 40 kilowatts AC for the overbilling that occurs of their bill demand charges with solar. The photovoltaic demand credit rider with XL Energy has properly addressed this issue and provides compensation for the benefits their customers' solar arrays bring to the grid. Throughout this process, the other public utilities have largely ignored this overbilling and have not come forward with a fair compensation mechanism to date. This language will require them to finally address this issue. This compensation mechanism has opened up the market for larger scale on-site solar arrays in XL Energy territory, and it is our hope that this language will do the same for the other public utilities, resulting in a significant increase in the amount of on-site solar installed in Minnesota. Thank you. That concludes my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Solem. Next, we have Bree Halverson with the Blue-Green Alliance. Ms. Halverson, please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman, and thank you, Chair Long and members of the committee. I am Bree Halverson, Regional Program Manager for the Blue-Green Alliance. The Blue-Green Alliance unites labor unions and environmental organizations to solve today's environmental challenges in ways that create and maintain quality jobs and build a clean and thriving and equitable economy. I'm here today to testify in favor of Representative Liz Lagarde's Buy Clean, Buy Fair provisions in the Climate and Energy Finance Omnibus Bill. We are happy that this bill not only supports the technologies to help support the move to a cleaner energy economy, but also supports current and future workers in Minnesota, as well as supporting clean domestic manufacturers. Blue-Green Alliance supports a Buy Clean, Buy Fair study and pilot program in this bill. It would take the first step in ensuring that public dollars do not support worker exploitation at home or abroad, that we do not only buy clean products, but ones that are fair to workers as well. The clean buy fair is an important addition to the climate and energy policy bill because it creates the goal of incorporating low carbon construction purchasing requirements that address greenhouse gas emissions from construction materials into government purchasing. It also creates a goal to collect data to set working condition standards of the manufactured processes with a pilot program. Many manufacturers in Minnesota and the U.S. are cleaner than their global competitors, and our members in our organization are ready to supply the materials and products we need to fix Minnesota and America's infrastructure. By enacting Buy Clean policies, we can ensure that taxpayer dollars are being spent responsibly on materials that are manufactured in a cleaner, more efficient, environmentally friendly manner, reducing pollution and the negative health impacts that go along with it while supporting good jobs in Minnesota and across the nation. Thank you, Chair Long, for including Buy Fair, Buy Clean, and thank you, Representative Liz Lagarde, for working so very hard on this, as well as Representative Frank Bernstein, and thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Ms. Halverson. Next, we have Shane Zart with the Coalition of Minnesota Utility, of Minnesota Cities, excuse me. Go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, well, thank you, Chair and members. My name is Shane Zart, and I'm with the firm Flaherty and Hood, and representing the Coalition of Utility Cities is the name. So we're close, but we got it. But the Coalition of Utility Cities is a group of eight cities that host the state's largest power plants and represents those cities on the unique impacts they face, both as those plants operate in their communities and as they head toward eventual retirement. So on behalf of that group, I'm here to thank Chair Long for including the host community and worker transition planning language from Representative Christensen's House File 1750 in this bill, and Representative Christensen for her work on this throughout session. Combined with programs like the Community Energy Transition Grant Program that was created with bipartisan support last year, the creation of the planning effort and the structure in this bill to put an infrastructure in place at DEED to provide ongoing support to these communities and workers would establish Minnesota as a leader among our peers nationwide in making sure that we're working proactively to protect the interests of communities and workers who might be directly impacted by the retirement of our largest load facilities. As a coalition, we have a goal to make this statewide planning effort as inclusive of as many communities as possible who may face this transition, whether today or 5 years from now or 20 years from now, including those like our nuclear communities who might have a longer planning horizon, but want to use that time as effectively as possible to plan. And with that, we've communicated some question and concern to Chair Long about whether the current language of the bill might exclude a nuclear community like Red Wing in those planning efforts. But we hope to be able to continue that discussion as the bill moves forward to the end of session. But I'll finish with a big round of thank yous. And to keep it brief, I'll thank Representative Christensen, first and foremost, who put in a great deal of work on this bill and the issue of community and worker transition generally. Throughout session and dating back to the last couple sessions, Chair Long again for including it. And I think nearly half of this committee signed on as co-authors, but I'll call out Representative Liz Lagarde's Mecklen and Igo in particular, since they have some of those cities in their districts that will be impacted by some of these transitions in the near future and have been supportive of their local efforts and planning as well. So with that, I'll conclude, but happy to remain on for any questions. And thank you again for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Zart. Next, we have Annie Levinson-Falk with the Citizens Utility Board. Please state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, and good morning, Madam Chair, Chair Long, and committee members. My name is Annie Levinson-Falk, and I'm the Executive Director of the Citizens Utility Board of Minnesota, a nonprofit advocate for residential and small business utility consumers. In my 2 minutes, I'm focused on just a couple provisions of the omnibus bill before you. The bill contains the Energy Conservation and Optimization, or ECO Act. ECO would modify the state's longstanding energy conservation program so that they'll continue to help people reduce their energy bills on a permanent basis. It would help to expand the types of conservation measures available to consumers and increase savings programs for low-income households. This provision has support that's as broad as any energy proposal that I've seen, including from cooperative, municipal, and investor-owned utilities, trade unions, electrical and mechanical contractors, environmental groups, and consumer representatives like CUB. The omnibus bill also contains an update to another longstanding statute to improve public interest representation at the Public Utilities Commission. PUC decisions largely determine where Minnesotans' energy will come from and how much it'll cost. It's very resource intensive to participate in these proceedings, and public interest organizations are not able to keep up with the ever-growing number of important questions before the commission. The result is that too often the commission's in the position of making decisions without comprehensive evidence and arguments on the record. This is why the legislature enacted the Intervenor Compensation Statute. The statute allows parties representing a public purpose to earn reimbursement of their costs participating under certain criteria. After 14 years, it is now in need of an update. This bill would allow intervener compensation for nonprofits, tribal nations, and individuals, and more types of PUC dockets than the current law. At the same time, it strengthens the qualifications for compensation and introduces caps on compensation amounts to ensure the costs are never significant to ratepayers. This provision is a modest but meaningful change that will result in better representation of the interests of regular Minnesotans in important utility decisions. On behalf of the Citizens Utility Board, I'm happy to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Levinson-Falk. Next, we have Dr. Mike Menzel with Health Professionals for a Healthy Climate. Dr. Menzel, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Mike Menzel, and I'm a physician, grandparent, and member of Health Professionals for a Healthy Climate, a network of over 500 Minnesota health professionals. We support HP 2110 in its entirety, but I'd like to highlight a few provisions that will improve health by reducing air pollution and create greater health equity. What concerns health professionals about the impacts of climate and health? Well, increasing heat-related morbidity and mortality that impacts the health and safety of children and construction crews out on high heat index days. Low-income urban communities living beside busy roadways, breathing toxic levels of air pollution. Earlier emerging tick-borne diseases. In March, a surgeon discovered a tick on a friend during back surgery. Ticks in early March were unheard of years ago. Provisions in this bill will help us achieve a healthier carbon-free future. We know where the biggest gains can be found, such as requiring 100% carbon-free electricity, integrating greenhouse gas emission reductions into all state activities, and identify where we can work to meet our net zero goals, requiring utilities to utilize clean energy resources to meet all new energy demands. Energy conservation is also highlighted in this bill, and this is a low-hanging fruit that can save everyone money on our utility costs. Solar programs that can reduce energy costs for school districts, community solar gardens will build on its success with low-income communities. Provisions in HF 2110 promotes electrification of transportation that will reduce climate impacts and air pollution. Many days, we saw air quality improvement with less traffic during the pandemic. House File 2110 will clean up our air for everyone's benefit. I wish to thank the committee for the hard work and time that they've put into these hearings, and thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Dr. Menzel. Next, we have Mark Kalar with AIA Minnesota. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Mark Kaler. I'm a Minneapolis architect speaking on behalf of AIA Minnesota's 2,300 architects and design professionals to offer our support for the Omnibus Climate and Energy Finance and Policy Bill. There are many provisions in the bill that will further our ability to slow the impact of climate change, promote the economic growth of our state, and provide public and private entities with the necessary tools to create a more resilient future for our built environment. We have an opportunity here to reduce energy use and carbon production for Minnesota's built environment using tools we already have on hand. A number of provisions in this bill will help us accomplish our mission to reduce climate impacts, but perhaps none has more dramatic potential than the acceleration of Minnesota's commercial energy building code adoption process. Programs like SB 2030 are meeting environmental goals and saving the state tens of millions of dollars each year in operating costs by providing better than code energy standards in public buildings. Minnesota's architects are already taking building envelope, mechanical systems, site orientation, and other strategies and putting them to use for their private sector clients. But accelerating the pace of review of our energy code can help us expand that success even further and more comprehensively into the private sector. If Minnesota doesn't more rapidly update its commercial building energy standards, we set ourselves up to pay more in the future through costly retrofits and energy assistance. Today's baseline code building is tomorrow's energy assistance request. We need to raise the minimum expectation statewide to give every community an opportunity to build better, higher performing buildings to serve their residents. I'd also like to highlight our support for the Rebuild Right Grant Program. This program acknowledges the interconnection of racial, social, and climate issues and provides funding and technical support to help make neighborhoods damaged by last year's civil unrest more resilient, more energy efficient, and healthier. We are helping them build back better and setting them up for success, which will benefit all Minnesotans. We'd like to thank Chair Long and committee members for putting together this bill, which will have a significant positive impact on our built environment and the lives of Minnesota residents. AIA Minnesota respectfully requests your continued support of the Accelerated Commercial Energy Code and Rebuild Right provisions and stands ready to work with you as this bill moves forward. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Kaler. Next, we have Sam Benson with the Minnesota Interfaith Power and Light. Please state your name for the record and continue with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Sam Benson, and I'm on staff with Minnesota Interfaith Power and Light. Appreciate the opportunity to speak to the committee in support of this bill. Our organization works with faith communities and individuals across the state who care about climate change and creating a clean energy future. We are excited by the contents of this bill. The 100% clean energy standard is an important step towards transitioning our state towards that clean energy future. The Next Generation Climate Act, which updates the state's carbon emission goals, is another crucial component of the bill that we strongly support. We're also excited to see money appropriated for clean energy efforts such as solar on schools and state buildings, along with meaningful policy improvements such as updates to the Community Solar Gardens Program. Additionally, a number of provisions in this bill focus on ensuring a just transition so that communities that currently have a high number of energy jobs are supported during the transition to a more renewable energy economy. We strongly back these provisions. Our members care deeply about the importance of caring for our environment and protecting our state's natural resources for future generations. The spending and policy provisions in this bill are an important step in that direction, and we encourage members of the committee to support it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Benson. Next, we have Rob Christensen with St. Paul. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, my name is Rob Christensen. I'm speaking as a member of Minnesota Natural Health Coalition and its project Stop Geoengineering Minnesota. You may have received my mailing, and by the way, I drive tractor and trailer for the post office overnight, so it's my old-fashioned way of doing things. It's a fact photo booklet or fact sheet from geoengineeringwatch.org. And I want to thank the Climate Committee members, of course, for your hard work, and thank you for this opportunity to speak. Representative Hollins, I was delighted she responded to my needs in a time of crisis during the Capitol takeover of the White House, the attempted takeover. And also, Mike Molson, thank you so much for your quick responses, because this is a very important issue. In fact, with every fiber of my being, I will not stop on this issue. I want to bring your attention to a new documentary from March 10th this year called The Dimming. Global climate engineering operations have been taking place for over 70 years. All we have to do is look up into the sky. I was going to read from script, but I know I don't have time. But if you spend 3 minutes in The Dimming, you're going to see the diagrams of all the patents for spraying aerosols into our environment. And what was found in The Dimming? Well, with former or retired generals from the Army, with top level health professionals, it's chock full of credible sources to explain this global phenomenon that's being overlooked. It's national security, and I guess such things have to be kept in the closet, just like nuclear testing was years ago and how many people got cancer. Things aren't known, but you know, this planet is not a physics lab. And yet The Dimming proves with direct measurements, okay, point to point from a NOAA flying lab for the first time made to the public, that aluminum nanoparticles, the primary means to manipulate weather, have been dumped for decades into our air columns, our water, our soil. And the damage is beyond belief. There's records to show this. So I can't get into that now. But I marched on Earth Day with Paul Wellstone back in 1990. I was a staff organizer for Earth Day. What a wonderful moment. But as raising a family, I just heard about this on the radio. I never looked up in the sky and noticed the cobwebs. It's just such a gradual phenomenon. I understand why people wouldn't know. But invisible power of microwave technology can manipulate these nanoparticles, these electroconductive materials. And for example, the Texas snowstorm, this is old. Patents of ice nucleation can be used to drop temperatures 20 degrees. Why is it 3 degrees in Texas and 30 degrees at the North Pole? We have ionospheric heaters. This technology can be looked up. The Dimming will explain all this. I think I've run out of time, but let's have an Earth Day discussion to look into this, because there is a federal lawsuit with Minnesota leadership. Freedom of information, let's protect our freedom, our constitution, and look into this inquiry. It's ongoing. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you, Mr. Christensen, for your testimony. Next, we have Peter Wagenius with Sierra Club. Mr. Wagenius, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Peter Wagenius from Sierra Club. Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill includes many critically important policies, starting with updating our goals to net zero as provided in the Next Generation Climate Act. This bill also puts us on a path to reach that goal for electricity with the 100% bill itself, and we particularly appreciate recognizing that energy from the HERC should not be considered renewable like solar and wind. Reaching our goals will also require investments. With solar on schools, EVs, and more, this bill moves us forward. This bill is so strong regarding electricity because it's based on current science and technology. Policy needs to keep up with reality, and for electricity, this bill does. For fossil gas, it doesn't do that yet. In the Natural Gas Innovation Act, gas is treated very differently from electricity. Unlike with the 100% bill, where we're pushing electric utilities towards specific goals, gas utilities oppose having goals in their section of the bill, which should require getting to 100% as called for by 2050 as called for by the IPCC. When it comes to electricity, we know what to do and we are acting on that knowledge. For fossil gas, there are studies and pilot projects as if we don't know. How about training workers to replace gas water heaters with cleaner electric? How about rebates for those water heaters and other electric alternatives like stoves and dryers? These aren't future technologies, they're here now. The climate crisis is going to force us to do gas to electric conversion sooner or later, but sooner is better for the climate and for jobs, because these green energy conversion jobs cannot be computerized or outsourced. Gas utilities won't suggest these ideas, and under questioning in the earlier hearing, CenterPoint acknowledged they don't have emission reduction goals. For these reasons, Sierra Club opposes including the RNG bill as currently written into this otherwise very strong bill, and we would encourage committee members to be on guard if this bill comes back with the RNG language intact, but without the crucial goals and targets we are rightly celebrating today. Thank you, Representative Long and Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Wagenius. Next, we have Ellen Anderson with MCEA. Ms. Anderson, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning. I'm Ellen Anderson, Climate Program Director at Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, or MCEA. We're a nonprofit organization with almost 50 years of experience using law and science to protect Minnesota's environment and the health of its people. We're focused on achieving equitable climate solutions that provide benefits to all Minnesotans with clean air and water, clean energy jobs, and protection of our treasured natural resources. We are delighted that the omnibus bill includes the Next Generation Climate Act, and we thank you, Madam Chair, for your leadership on the bill, and thank all of you who co-authored it as well. In 2007, Minnesota led the nation in adopting science-based standards to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and now it's time for us to lead again. We need to follow the science that tells us we must move faster, and the 2007 law needs to be strengthened now to ensure the targets are implemented across all sectors of the economy. And I know this committee and Chair Long knows is very well aware that Minnesota is woefully behind in meeting those targets. The Next Generation Climate Bill follows the Climate Act follows the guide of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which said in 2018 we must limit warming to 1.5 degrees by the end of the century to avoid the worst impacts of climate change, so our children and grandchildren have a chance to have a good quality of life in the coming years. And we all have a responsibility to do our part to meet this global challenge. So what this bill does is updates the greenhouse gas reduction targets to at least a 45% reduction by 2030 and net zero by 2050. And the bill ensures that the greenhouse gas reduction targets will be incorporated into all aspects of state agency action. So this is the accountability part. Next year, the Climate Change Subcabinet will report back to you with a climate transition plan that incorporates the GHG targets to all agency activities, including but not limited to planning, awarding grants, purchasing, regulating, funding, and permitting. So we also must ensure that the implementation of our climate goals does not disproportionately impact environmental justice communities, and that the benefits of clean air and clean energy are made accessible to every Minnesotan. We are very supportive of the many equity provisions in this and other House bills. I also want to say briefly, we are very supportive of this omnibus bill overall and support the many important bills within it. We especially call out the 100% clean energy bill, which is so crucial to lead us towards an equitable, low carbon future that benefits all Minnesotans. I'll note that the 100% bill has even more ambitious targets than the Next Generation Climate Act. And that's for a good reason, because the 100% bill focuses on the electricity sector, which has been moving forward on carbon reduction. The Next Generation Climate Act focuses on all sectors of the economy, which all need to ramp up their greenhouse gas reduction dramatically and quickly. So they are very complementary with each other. Finally, I've also submitted written testimony for the committee that describes some of the many other bills we strongly support, but I don't have time to mention them today. Thank you again, Chairman Long. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee members, for this bill that creates a roadmap for Minnesota's clean energy, low carbon, equitable future. And thank you so much for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Ms. Anderson. Next, we have Sarah Wolf with Minnesota Environmental Partnership. Ms. Wolf, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hey, Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Good morning. My name is Sarah Wolf. And I'm the Advocacy Director with the Minnesota Environmental Partnership. We are a coalition of over 70 organizations working on many different aspects of environmental issues, but united in our understanding that climate is one of the forces that will impact each of those issues most. The year 2021 is an important opportunity to build forward at the scale and pace we need for our communities and our climate. The world scientists have given us deadlines and our policy should be constructed to meet them. That is why we are so thankful for your incredible work this session to move us forward on so many fronts. House File 2110 is filled with great policy that the Minnesota Environmental Partnership supports because it will help us equitably meet our greenhouse gas emission reduction goals. Moving to 100% clean electricity as fast as possible, solar on schools, electrifying transportation, decarbonizing buildings, and so much more. I'd like to focus my quick comments in just two categories. First, the Next Generation Climate Act discussed by Ellen Anderson and others that updates our emissions targets. When we are behind in meeting our current targets, why is it important that they be updated? Because we have to have the right destination in mind as we choose the policies that will get us there. A path that could get us to 80% reductions of emissions may not be a path that also gets us to zero emissions. Our timeline requires that we avoid emission reduction pathways that can't help us get to our final goal. Secondly, we really want to appreciate the bill's efforts to explore decarbonization of the natural gas sector with the Natural Gas Innovation Act. Provisions bringing this issue within the purview of the PUC are positive. We'd like to note two points. First, putting the right goals into statute motivates the right action. We saw this with the Next Generation Energy Act in 2007, and though no one knew at the time how we would get there, it put in place goals for achieving 25% clean electricity by 2025, and those goals were met 7 years early. Innovation is driven by policy. Measurable goals for decarbonizing the natural gas sector are not present in this bill and would be a terrific addition. It's a needed category for us to address as a state. Secondly, I'd like to look at the manure lagoons from confined feedlot operations create significant issues for water and air quality in communities across Minnesota. We appreciate that provisions in this omnibus bill seek to limit growth of these factory farm operations for the purpose of renewable natural gas. However, we'd like to highlight that using manure as a renewable fuel source disregards the inherent environmental harms that these lagoons produce, and this technology would not mitigate the water, land, and air pollution that impacts negatively communities across our state. We should seek to avoid this type of industrial farming and pollution through more sustainable agriculture and energy processes. In sum, thank you so much for your work this legislative session, and thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Ms. Wolf. Next, we have Ahmad Kayan, president from Apadena Technology. Mr. Kayan, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Chair Long, and members of the committee. I'm actually Andy Gok with Apadena and Apadena Solar Technologies. Our president, Ahmad Kian, had something come up in the last minute, so I'll be representing our company here today. Our company is a small business with 40 plus employees. Our main work is LED lighting upgrades and solar installations. We've benefited in the past from legislation that has been around this topic as well as will benefit from this current legislation. It helps our CAT staff stay working and helps us grow. With the CIP program for LED lighting, it's made possible for thousands of for-profit businesses to upgrade their lighting for better lighting, as well as to save money for their bottom line. A quick payback for these businesses is essential. They're not sure where they're gonna be in 5 to 10 years, and if they can do something with a 1 to 3 year payback on lighting, it's gonna make it feasible. We've also done a lot of work with nonprofits like RS Eden, Red Cross, Aon, and others. And the rebate program through SIP has made these projects possible. On the solar side, we've developed a number of community solar gardens as well as commercial and residential projects. The federal tax credits and Excel programs have made a lot of these projects possible, but there's still a lot that are not feasible for businesses, nonprofits, and schools that need a quicker payback to be able to justify taking on that loan or using their capital reserves. In particular, in this bill is solar on school, which has been mentioned. It's got an upfront cost, but those savings will help expedite savings for those schools that can be used for teachers or other costs and be a reliable source of income for those schools. The bottom line is that this bill would help our small business and other small businesses throughout Minnesota be successful. And I thank this committee for putting a bill like this together. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gulk. Next, we have Reed Richardson from U.S. Solar. Mr. Richardson, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. Thank you. My name is Reed Richardson. I'm the Chief Operating Officer for U.S. Solar, a developer, owner, and operator of solar projects based in Minnesota. First, we'd like to thank Representatives Long and Akim for your hard work put into understanding the community solar program issues and for leading the way towards a solution. The impact of this program has been very positive. U.S. Solar has mobilized several hundred million dollars of construction investment in Minnesota. We employ about 25 people in Minnesota, and provided for hundreds of jobs at dozens of contractors, many of whom are union. We've purchased equipment from local manufacturers and suppliers, including nearly $30 million of solar panels from a manufacturer located on the Iron Range in northern Minnesota. We directly contract with about 1,500 residential subscribers and dozens of school other communities throughout the state. Our projects enhance rural electrical infrastructure to connect to power lines and substations. Additionally, our projects pay over $1 million annually in rent to our farmer landowners to lease portions of fields from their farm operations. And that's spread throughout 25 counties across Minnesota. And on that land, we've converted nearly 1,000 acres back to native, deep-rooted prairie grass and pollinator-friendly habitat. The crux of the matter is this. There are plenty of rural landowners that want to participate in this program and host 7-acre solar gardens. But a vast majority of these projects are getting squeezed in the same areas with the same electrical substations in order to be located adjacent to metro or suburban areas. And on the other hand, there are plenty of electrical customers that want to subscribe and participate in the community solar program, but they live in suburban or urban areas and don't necessarily have access to additional projects. So without this fix to the arbitrary contiguous county rule, both of these groups of people will be left out as the opportunities to locate projects in these more populated counties are drying up. With this fix, which is how community solar programs operate in many other states in our country, we can actually contribute greatly towards clean energy and decarbonization goals expressed by government, businesses, and utilities, provide access to more urban subscribers, and give rural property owners and contractors additional opportunities for income and jobs, all of which can be accomplished without new programs, rules, regulations, or government spend. For those reasons, we support this bill, and thank you very much for the time.
Thank you, Mr. Richardson. Next, we have Cindy Steinhauser with the City of Rochester. Ms. Steinhauser, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair. My name is Cindy Steinhauser, and I'm the Community Development Director in Rochester, Minnesota. I'm also someone from a city in Greater Minnesota who works closely with our building officials and development community and value the local partnerships that we have created. I'm here to share support for the language in Section 27 of the bill on lines 45.13 to 46.25 that would allow for higher building energy standards for new commercial and multifamily buildings. This aligns nicely with Rochester's legislative priority to enable local entities to adopt higher commercial building energy standards that will result in lower energy costs while reducing air pollution and contributions to global climate change. I testified in support of this language earlier this session in February when it was House File 831 from Chair Long. The built environment is where municipalities can directly impact greenhouse gas reduction. Making our buildings more efficient directly correlates to helping us achieve our reduction goals. Rochester recognizes that unless we start approaching our work differently, we won't meet our goals of 30% greenhouse gas reduction by 2025 and 80% by 2050. However, this change is just part of the equation. Making green energy code a first thought and not a last thought is a multi-pronged effort that requires code changes and education. And to that note, in February, I shared an example of how we worked with a developer to apply SB 2030 standards to their project using off-the-shelf items that cost less than 0.5% of their total project. The result was an astounding 67% energy reduction below the current base code. We were able to require green code changes because of the public incentives involved, and we need legislation that will help us do this for other projects, regardless of incentives. I'm excited to share that since February, this housing project continues to move forward with local support. This legislation and language would greatly help us advance this and other projects. We really appreciate the chair's inclusion of this language into the omnibus bill. It has environmental, social, and economic benefits to our communities and to our residents. We look forward to continuing to see this momentum on this issue in the remaining weeks of the legislative session, and thank you for your time and your work on this very important issue.
Thank you, Ms. Steinhauser. Next, we have David Schaefer with MNSEA. Mr. Schaefer, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Aikum and representatives of the committee. My name is David Schaefer, and I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Solar Energy Industries Association, or MNSEA. We represent 125 different solar companies or solar-related businesses in Minnesota. Those companies employ over 4,200 Minnesotans across the state. Thank you for granting me the opportunity to speak to House File 2110, the Omnibus Climate and Energy Finance and Policy Bill. I'm here today on behalf of our members to voice our support for the bill overall. We'd like to thank the committee for bringing it forward and to all the authors of the underlying bills for their hard work and perseverance. I will speak to the underlying bill components that we support in particular, and they were happy to see included in this bill. First up is Solar on Schools, authored by Representative Aikum. It grants RDA funds to school districts in Xcel's service territory and others to mitigate their second highest cost, which is energy. Those savings can be reinvested into the classroom or can lift the property tax burden of those districts. Hands-on learning experiences in STEM is crucial for kids, and this program will provide exactly that. We're also excited to see the language from House File 1879, authored by Representative Lippert and with bipartisan support from Representative Heinrich, including this omnibus bill. It'll help turn brownfields into bright fields by cutting the red tape that holds back a utility solar project on the Anoka-Ramsey closed landfill, and will set the stage for the future. Third is the underlying provision of House File 1651, authored by Representative Hollins and co-authored by Representative Olson, that will fix an overbilling problem in Minnesota Power and Otter Tail Power service territories by requiring the utilities to file a PV demand credit tariff at the PUC. A similar tariff in Xcel's service territory has been successful with commercial and industrial customers that install solar, and this provision would be present in each IOU service territory thereafter. Fourth is the underlying bill languages of House File 653, authored by Representative Aikum, which would remove the arbitrary requirement that community solar subscribers be in the same or contiguous county as the garden they subscribe to. The economic development this program has brought to the metropolitan area could be spread across even more parts of the state in Xcel service territory, which would eliminate this terrible market barrier. Keeping with community solar, we are excited to see the proposal in Representative Long's underlying bill of House File 1397. Good to see that included. And it would focus on a portion of the community solar garden program for residential subscribers with the rate what residential customers pay for electricity and with transparency and governing requirements. We're also excited to see the size increase from Representative Long's other underlying community solar garden reform bill in there. And we're pleased to see the other piece of legislation that will take community solar gardens to the next level. We're also appreciative of the underlying language of House File 1226, authored by Representative Aikum, that would remove a section of law from the 90s meant to spur renewable development, but now hampers it. Removing it will mean that mid-sized solar and wind will get fair treatment through the same avoided cost pricing as independent gas plants. Removing this provision is a prudent step towards leveling the playing field between qualifying facilities and monopoly utilities. We have quite a long list today. The bipartisan language of House File 257, authored by Representative Wozlik and co-authored by Representative West, would give Minnesotans that live in homeowners associations the same rights to install rooftop solar as those that don't live in an HOA. Our understanding is this will be amended in tomorrow, and it will ensure customers will have more access to solar no matter where they live in Minnesota. There's also the underlying language of House File 2052, again, authored by Representative Lippert, which distinguishes solar farms from much larger thermal generating plants in the farmland exclusion rule. Solar is exempt from the rule if the solar installation provide beneficial habitat for game birds, songbirds, and pollinators, or if the land can still be used for agricultural purposes.
I need you to wrap up. I'm sorry.
All right. I'll summarize it by saying this. There's a tremendous amount of great things in this bill, and we appreciate everyone that's worked on the underlying bills and has managed to get these bills included in this omnibus bill. So thank you all for hearing what I had to say today. Thank you for supporting this, and we urge passage out of this committee and out of this body. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schaefer. Next, we have Eric Passy with Impact Power Solutions. Mr. Passy, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi. Thank you, thank you, Chair Long, Representative Akam, for having me here today to give my testimony. My name is Eric Passy. I'm the Chief Development Officer and co-owner of Impact Power Solutions. We're headquartered in Roseville, Minnesota, and we're recently recognized as the largest Midwest-based commercial solar development company by our primary industry publication. In 2021, we're celebrating 30 years in business, and we're broadly supportive of House File 2110. IPS develops solar projects across the country now, but really grew up during the advent of our state's community solar program in 2013 with the passage of the Solar Jobs Act. And since that time, we've helped move Minnesota forward in several key and distinct ways. First, we've helped hundreds of farmers create stable income for themselves and their families during unprecedented crop volatility. And secondly, we've created hundreds of good-paying local jobs in the community. And third, solar developers have upgraded Xcel's aging infrastructure on our own dime. And finally, developers have provided millions of dollars in savings, and in IPS's case, mostly for schools and municipalities across the state. Community solar program in Minnesota is important to the state's growing but nascent clean energy industry. The somewhat arbitrary requirement that subscribers be located in the same or adjacent county has restricted access to underrepresented communities and organizations. For example, the St. Paul Public Housing Authority released a request for proposal in 2019 to provide solar savings to its residents and didn't receive a single response because of this issue. Minnesota's program was modeled after Xcel's program in Colorado. And in 2019, their legislation modernized their program by eliminating that provision. In summary, we need to support the solar industry and do so without budget impacts by making this small administrative tweak to the program. And again, we're broadly in support of this omnibus bill. Thank you so much for your time and the opportunity to present my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Passy. Next, we have Brendan Jordan with Drive Electric. Mr. Jordan, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members. My name is Brendan Jordan, and I oversee a transportation and fuel program at the Great Plains Institute, wearing a few hats. Generally speaking, Great Plains Institute supports a multi-pronged approach to transportation sector decarbonization, including cleaner fuels, electric vehicles, transit, bike and pedestrian infrastructure, and sustainable communities. We see huge economic opportunity for the state as we make these new investments and make sure that they are made equitably. A big part of our role is to facilitate broad coalitions. I will focus primarily on EV components of this bill, but I do want to mention very briefly that we work with a coalition that supports Representative Lippert's Future Fuels Act, and it's great to see that included in the omnibus bill. Also, a coalition that supports the Natural Gas Innovation Act, and it's exciting to see that as well. From a Drive Electric Minnesota perspective, Drive Electric Minnesota is a broad coalition of electric vehicle industry partners. It's so exciting to see EV provisions being brought forward by a number of legislators, including Representative Stevenson, Bierman, Lee, Hornstein, and others. Some issues are divisive. This is an issue where there is a really a great opportunity for common ground. Among the policies that support EV adoption in this bill are purchase incentives with provisions to assure access for lower income consumers, clarification of the role of utilities and guidance for utilities as they make investments to benefit their customers, provisions accelerating adoption of electric school buses, transit buses, and several provisions related to public electric vehicle charging. Increasing access to EV technology will be good for Minnesotans. It will lead to jobs, a more innovative economy, benefits for utility customers, and reduced air pollution. These provisions have broad stakeholder support, and it is great to see them included in this bill. Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Jordan. Next, we have Justin Wilson. I guess we should say last but not least, we have Justin Wilson with ChargePoint. Mr. Wilson, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Mr. Wilson, are you here? Maybe not. So maybe what we'll do is proceed to member questions. And if Mr. Wilson joins us, we can have him provide his testimony in the last few minutes. So I believe Representative Swazinski, you had a question early on. We'll start with you. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this message, question is for the commissioner, acting commissioner. Is she on the call yet?
I believe so.
I am. I have not left.
Okay. Sounds good. Just was, you had spoken obviously in favor of the bill. Was seeing if there was any provisions that were not included in this bill that the governor was hoping to get into this bill.
All of the governor's proposals were included in this bill. Representative Swazinski, did you follow up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then is there any provisions in this bill that you disagree with or wish would not be in this bill?
Commissioner Arnold.
Representative Swazinski, are you referencing some specific provisions? I'm not sure it's worth the committee's time to go through each one, but we could.
Well, no, I think it's important you've got, you know, everything else that you'd like. It'd be interesting to see what you do not like from the commissioner's standpoint and the governor's standpoint.
Representative Swazinski and Chair Acom, we have had conversations with a few members that have and have been ongoing with a variety of the proposals that are in the bill.
Thank you, Commissioner Arnold.
Madam Chair.
Representative Swazinski.
What was that? Was that an answer, Commissioner? I mean, what do you have specific policies that are in this bill that you disagree with or would rather not have in the bill?
Commissioner, well, actually, Representative Swazinski, I think that the commissioner answered the question, and certainly she could talk with you more offline if that might be helpful. So with that, unless there's anything else you'd like to provide, Commissioner Arnold. I think that, okay, so we'll move on. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, my question would be for the author of the bill, Chair Long, if he's available.
I believe he's here. Go ahead with your question, Representative Grunhagen.
Yeah, Mr. McCann testified from, I think it was Otter Tail, if I remember right, that we're having much more negative CO2 from methane in landfills because we're not incinerating. In fact, he said that you get 12 for every one ton of CO2 in other areas of the economy, you get 12 tons from the methane in the landfills. To me, we should be directing our efforts at the landfills and building incinerators that quit allowing the production of this methane in a negative standpoint, which is what's really causing a huge problem in our environment, rather than so much of this other stuff, which doesn't seem to be a problem, according to Mr. McCann's testimony. Just appreciate what your thoughts are after hearing his comments. I got one more question after that.
Representative Long.
Thank you, Chair Acom. Thank you, Representative Grunhagen, for the question. I do respectfully disagree with the framing, I think, that we heard from the testifier about
there being a binary choice between burning trash and landfilling. There are other options, and that includes recycling, that includes composting, that includes diversion on the front end, and those do reduce greenhouse gas emissions compared to landfilling as well, and in fact, compared to burning. And I would personally support going much further in that direction, but the bill as it's structured does not prevent any burning of waste. All it would do is not allow it to count towards clean energy, and so it couldn't be used for energy production, and that I believe is required to meet our greenhouse gas goals.
Thank you, Representative Long, a very important distinction. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Long, or Chair Long, for that response. I, however, remember on his testimony, he referred to some of the other things that you mentioned also, as far as a willingness to look at recycling and some of these other things too. But again, look at the ratio of methane doing damage to our environment at 12 tons for every one ton of methane from other sources. I think it's quite compelling, to tell you the truth. Also, just encourage you to look at a Reuters industry report on Germany's energy drive towards so-called green energy. It's a federal audit in Germany of their green energy drive. And they have the highest electricity rates in Europe. It's endangering their competitiveness. They're at a point where they're going to have rolling blackouts, and they're going to need $100 billion to upgrade their energy network because of the ineffectiveness of so-called green energy. It's damaging the poor, who are paying over 20% of their income on energy prices. So, we're headed down a very similar path with this bill, which is going to be disastrous. And I hope if you review these articles and again, they're dated March 30th, 2021, so that it's relatively recent audit, that you would be swayed by actual scientific facts of what this green energy path leads us to. I know there's a lot of people who testify to go to make big money off of this, but we need to worry about all Minnesotans and not just people who are going to make money off this so-called bill. Any thoughts?
Representative Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. We are not following in Germany's footsteps here. Germany has taken its own path, and certainly I think there are things that we can learn from Germany for the good and for the bad. They haven't done everything right, but one thing they have done is that they are one of the nation's leading clean energy manufacturers, the world's leading. And so they, by being an early mover, have created some incredible economic opportunity in Germany. And I think that's one thing that I'm hoping we can replicate here in Minnesota.
Yeah, Madam Chair.
Representative Grunhagen, quickly.
Yeah, one more comment. I stick to my projection. This is the Obamacare of utility cost, skyrocketing costs, less effectiveness, and dirty results out of this bill. So I urge members to strongly oppose this and Chair Long to modify this bill to actually address where the problem's coming from. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Next, we have Representative Franzen. Go ahead with your question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to ask a question of Commissioner Arnold, please.
I think the commissioner is still here. Go ahead with your question.
Thank you, Commissioner Arnold. So I was listening to the exchange between you and Representative Swedinski, and I'm just wondering, as you were giving an evasive answer, I was talking to my computer screen, what are those proposals? So could you name off the proposals for the committee to be able to hear what you necessarily don't agree with in this bill? I don't like sidebar conversations or off the record conversations. This is a big bill. We have a big decision to make on how we're going to vote. So I'm hoping that you can tell the committee what those proposals are.
Thank you, Representative Franzen. And I think before turning it over to Commissioner Arnold, she did say that she'd be happy to walk through item by item. It is a big bill, and it would take a long time in order to do that. I'll pass it back to Representative, Commissioner Arnold for her response.
Thank you, Chair Akam and Representative Franson. There are a number of provisions we haven't weighed in on. So hopefully that answers your question. The intention was not to be evasive. Representative Franson, any follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It does not answer my question, but I assume that there are proposals. You just don't want to make it out on, you don't want to put it out there, but the constituents and that I work for and the public deserve transparency. And I feel like this exchange has not been very transparent. My next question, Madam Chair, would be for nonpartisan staff.
And I just, before moving on to that, I'll just say this is a legislative bill. And so really the people voting on this bill are the legislators, not the commissioners. And so I appreciate your interest in their feedback. I think this bill is being voted on by legislators. So for nonpartisan staff, go ahead with your question.
Madam Chair, when we vote, we take input from everybody. Otherwise, there's no point in having public testimony. And that is why they testify, so that we get a good idea of which way we should be voting. But for nonpartisan staff, if they could just tell us how many different new or enhanced cost recovery mechanisms are in the bill.
So would that go for Mr. Elaff or Ms. Blecker? Any thoughts?
Madam Chair, Bob Elaff from House Research. I can't do that certainly offhand, but I can do that once the hearing is over and get that information to all members of the committee.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Mr. Elaff. Any follow-up, Ms. Franzen? Or Representative,
yes,
I'm sorry.
I do have one more question. This would go for Representative Long. Representative Long, my question to you is, who will pay for the billions in transmission and other infrastructure required to comply with the California Energy First and the 100% by 2040 mandate?
Representative Long.
Thank you, Chair Akam, and thank you for the question, Representative Franzen. You know, I've read through the whole bill, and I didn't see a California Energy First provision, but maybe I missed something. In terms of transmission, we are there is a process going on right now that the utilities are leading in cooperation with MISO, our grid operator, and the Public Utilities Commission to look at the build-outs for transmission that are required for our clean energy transition. And those costs, I think, are to be determined. Usually they're shared by the transmission, shared between private companies and the grid operators and the utilities as well.
Madam Chair.
Representative Franzen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Representative Long, it sure sounds like a lot like that we need to pass this bill in order to find out just how expensive it's going to be. Now, Representative Grünhagen did touch base a little bit on Germany. I'm going to point out to an article in Reuters, which Germany's energy drive criticized over expense and risks. Now, this is not an old article. This is from March 30th, 2021, so just a week ago, Representative Long. And it says that household electricity bills are the highest in Europe. My constituents' money, your constituents' money, does not belong to us. It does not belong to the government. It belongs in their wallet. And they want to know exactly how much they can anticipate, if this bill is signed into law, what they can anticipate for energy costs. These are trying times. There's not a lot of loose money to throw around here for higher energy costs. In fact, we had a special hearing just on when the natural gas with CenterPoint. Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair and Representative Long, this is serious. We need real answers. We cannot pass a bill without knowing the actual cost that is going to hit the wallets of the people we work for.
I think Representative Long has already answered that, but I'll give it back for him to try again.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I spoke to this quite a bit with Representative Grünhagen in our hearing yesterday, but I'll just very briefly repeat some of the points I made then, which is that Representative Franzen, it sounds like you're Happy we live in Minnesota and not California or Germany, because our costs are the third lowest of our bills in the Midwest among neighboring states. And as I mentioned to Representative Grunhagen, we are, by pursuing clean energy, going to reduce costs even more. Wind is the cheapest form of energy in the United States. That is why utilities are moving towards it, because it will save money to build wind power. And also because we are seeing improvements in energy efficiency in this bill, we are going to see rates reduced, because if you aren't using energy, that is money saved in your pocket. So this bill will be reducing consumer costs.
Representative Long, thank you so much for that. We're going to have to make that our last word. We are unfortunately out of time. We are meeting tomorrow morning on April, I think it's 8th at 10:30, and amendments are due by 3 today. So thank you, and we'll see you tomorrow.